Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Mindful Metal Jacket. I thank you for listening. I'm happy you're here. I don't know how many people are here listening, but I keep getting messages and reviews. So maybe it's a few hundred people. I think it's a few thousand, a couple thousand at least. I don't know. Got to talk to my producer, I suppose. Speaking of which, go... most of you are probably listening as podcast form, but this is also on YouTube. I know people want to watch and listen to podcasts on YouTube, and you can go subscribe to the Laugh Button on YouTube. It's up every week. If you subscribe there, there's a bunch of other hilarious, great stuff. But you'll get, I guess, an update. I don't really know how a lot of things work, but if you subscribe, I think it pops up in your feed or something. I don't know how YouTube works. I'm not great at it, but I do have a YouTube special that's out right now. Comedy Central's YouTube. They did the bulk of the work as far as the technical aspect. Anyways, most of you, not most of you, many of you, maybe all of you, I don't know what number, but many of you have watched that and shared it. And if you haven't, I hope you do it. I hope you could do it now. Check it out. Give it a thumbs up and a nice comment. That helps the algorithm, I guess. And share it on your Insta story, your Twitter, your or text or phone call. I mean, you go old school. Call a friend. I'm always encouraging people to make phone calls in this on this podcast. Reach out to friends. Touch base. Touch genitals. And let them know to check out I Hate Myself on YouTube. And I do hate myself often, but that's something I'm working on here. We talk about it a little bit on this week's episode. And Ted and I talked about it on that episode. I do recognize the duality of the title, and it was on purpose. So I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you enjoyed the special. Thank you. Anyways, subscribe to the Laugh Button on YouTube. Subscribe to Joe List on YouTube also. I got some pretty low subscriber numbers. Not sure about Laugh Button, but if you do like podcasts on video, the video is up now. We switched to video format. A bunch of people were giving me the business for not being on YouTube. It is on there now. And they each get like a few hundred views, and maybe there's a couple thousand listening. Doesn't matter. What am I talking about? I'm going off on a tangent. Anyways, thank you for listening. Thank you for spreading the word about this podcast and watching the special. It means a lot to me. It makes me feel good. This week, my friend Rosebud Baker is on. Rosebud is a fantastic comedian and a very nice person who I like very much. And I was happy to chat with her. We had a good conversation. We talk about therapy, her history of therapy. We talk about going to kindergarten and feeling like everyone knew each other and being upset by it. We have some laughs, and we talk about sobriety, and we're both sober people. We discussed that a little bit, and that's how we've become friends. Well, through comedy as well, of course. She's a comedian who you should check out. I think it's Rosebud Baker on Twitter and Instagram. She plugs it towards the end, and she has two of her own podcasts that you can check out, and you can listen to this conversation. It's, I think, fun and funny. I enjoyed it very much. I kept hearing some sound thing. I'm just going to apologize for that. I tried to go find my headphones. So there's weird moments in the podcast. I leave for a couple seconds to find my headphones, and then my headphones don't work. And I kept hearing weird sounds, but she wasn't hearing them. So I'm hoping that you don't hear them. But that's just my anxiety taking over in the midst of the podcast. So I hope you enjoy it. I hope you go follow Rosebud, check her out. She's very funny. I think you'll enjoy her. And yeah, it was great. So subscribe to my YouTube, subscribe to Laugh Button's YouTube, and you can watch it on YouTube if you want. Spread the word, tell some friends, keep subscribing on wherever you listen to podcasts and leaving those really nice reviews. They're very touching. And all the emails and tweets and Instagrams have all been really nice. So thank you to all who have spread the word and keep listening. I mention him a lot. I love Alan Watts. So I thought I'd do a quote from Alan Watts. I'm reading this book, Ego is the Enemy by Ryan Holiday, that was mentioned a couple episodes ago, and I'm enjoying it. And in the middle of it, there's a quote from Alan Watts, who I love. He has a book called The Wisdom of Insecurity, which is one of my favorite books ever. And you should check that. I would read that book before this book. But anyways, here's a quote from Alan Watts. A person who thinks all the time has nothing to think about except thoughts, so he loses touch with reality and lives in a world of illusions. We all know what that's like. All right, folks, don't live in a world of illusions. Go do something. Anyways, first thing you can do is listen to this conversation between myself and the wonderful, the delightful, the hilarious Rosebud Baker. I think we're recording. We're recording. This is it. We're live.
You hit it?
Yeah. So I think it's, I should mention, I do no prep. I have no questions. I have no, I didn't watch anything or read anything. I'm just
That's
like,
great.
I'll talk to Rosebud for an hour.
That's great. That's perfect. I didn't do, actually, you know what? I did listen to this podcast.
Oh, no.
I listened to it. Well, I know. Well, it was you and Bobby.
Oh,
so
fun.
I was like, I'll listen. And I never really listen to podcasts before I do them, but today was, one of those days where you're just sitting around and you're like, maybe I'll listen to my friends talk.
How was it? Was it good?
It was horrible, Joe.
That was a real delay that made me nervous.
No, it was good. It was good.
All
you
right.
guys, and you guys are so close. It was like very easy to talk. It was almost like, it really felt like, I know people, I'm not reinventing the thought wheel here, but felt like listening in on a conversation between two people, because that's exactly what I was doing.
Yeah, but I know what you mean. Certainly it is a conversation between two people, but sometimes it sounds whatever douchey.
Well, it just sounds on, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like with two comics, you run the risk of sounding kind of disingenuous a little bit. I mean, not to others, but I think to comics.
Right. Yeah. That's why this podcast, I wanted to have a podcast where we don't have to be on. We can really be just off and sad. I'm going
Great.
For sad.
Well, you booked the right person.
Great. Are you a sad person?
I think normally if you had asked me that question, like last year, I think I'd be like, no. I'm not a sad person. I'm not an anxious person. I'm not, I would say that I have anger issues, but I think this year all that stuff has come up. Like all that, I've just had enough downtime to really figure out what's underneath the anger.
Right. Yeah. It's funny you say it because I have that. Sometimes I think that I confuse emotions where I'm like angry and then I'm actually sad. Wait, are you hearing a clicking? What's going on there with the clicking?
Nothing.
Oh,
I'm
shit.
Not clicking.
I'm hearing something.
What?
I think it's me. I don't know what's going on. Oh, fuck.
Is it my mic?
I think it might be mine. You're not hearing that?
No.
Oh, shit. This happens almost every episode, by the way. I lose my mind that the sound sucks. Maybe I need headphones. Should I get headphones? I got no headphones.
Get some headphones.
All right. Hold on 1 second. We'll cut this out. Hold on 1 second. Okay. I'll be right back. You talk.
All right. You know, you could just pause. Well, Joe, you're probably listening to this later, but you can pause the recording on Zoom. There's like a bar on the bottom and you can just, or actually at the top, and you can just press pause.
All right. Oh, shit. Is there?
Yeah.
Fuck, now we're going to have to edit this. This is too long. I can tell. All right. I got headphones.
Great.
Oh, now I can't hear you. Oh, fuck me. All right. All right. I'm just going to have to go with the popping.
All right. That's fine.
I'll tell my producer to cut this out. All right. But anyway, so what I was going to say is that... yeah, sometimes I think I have my emotions confused where I'm like, oh, I'm just angry. And then my therapist will be like, maybe you're sad. And then you're like, right. Oh, fuck, maybe I am sad.
Yeah, I think most of the time when I do get angry, it's like I go into this like this insane kind of anger. And then right when it's over, I'll start to cry. So I know that it's, that's what's actually like happening. But unless I'm actually, unless it's like a righteous anger, in which case I just feel right. And it's like really hard to let go of. But I do, like this year's been crazy because I just, I really have like felt, like I didn't think that I had anxiety at all. And then I realized like not everybody has this like deep fear of being poisoned. And I, this just started coming up where like I would go home from seeing friends or whatever. And I would, and this was even before the pandemic, I'd leave a show, I'd be driving home and I'd be like, I was poisoned. And I would freak out so much that I felt like I couldn't drive. And I was like, somebody had to point out to me that that's anxiety because I didn't know.
Yeah, that sounds like anxiety, maybe even OCD or something. I mean, that's like,
yeah, it's like an OCD version of anxiety is what I heard. It's like contamination fear, contamination anxiety.
Interesting, because yeah. I know I think Greg Warren talked about this, and I have a couple other friends that have a version of OCD where they get home and they think they ran over somebody. They hit someone with their car. So that feels
really
similar. Yeah. Like, and they've, people will drive back to the site to make sure they didn't hit somebody.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that mine seems similar.
Well, mine is all like based off of like, if I ate a cookie that came out of packaging that was sort of unlabeled, I'll be like, that was inedible. Or if I eat something that the packaging looks like it might've been a little ripped or something like that, like I'll just freak out. I'll be like, holy shit. Cause it doesn't make sense to me why there's so many fucked up people in the world. And I'm like, one of them has got to think it's funny to put like LSD in a popsicle. You know what I mean?
And sure.
I'll be like that. And of course I've never heard of this happening to anybody, but I freak out about it. Like I'm legitimately afraid of it.
Interesting. I have that with food to some degree. And I mean, I know you're talking about food. I said it like you weren't talking about food, but I have that with food similar to yours, but mine is with food, but no, mine is with like that. I have that. I'm going to have, what do you call it? Like food poisoning or something like that. I'll eat. And like, I think mine is because my sister got food poisoning from Wendy's one time. And I remember her just like shitting, you know, blood and throwing up on me and whatever it was. And I remember
blood.
Yeah. That part, I threw in the blood for fun, but, although that happened to Sarah also, she was shitting blood for like a couple of days, right at the election night, 2016. Yeah. Seriously, it was horrible. But anyways, but I'm so afraid of getting like food poisoning, and I have people check my food all the time and look inside, look at my hot dog. I'm like, is that the right color or whatever it is? Is this spinach okay? I have people smelling my food all the time. So it's not that dissimilar. I guess it's, in my mind, it's rarer to be poisoned. But I could be wrong about that. I don't know.
Well, I hate it because it's so self-important. It's like, I'm not a dictator. You know what I mean? Nobody's trying to fucking poison me. And that's the part of it that like is embarrassing. Cause I don't care that I'm, you know, if I seem crazy cause I'm worried that I was poisoned at a party. Like, I don't give a shit about seeming crazy. It's just like, does this bitch think that she's like a French tyrant? I hate that I share the same phobia as Donald Trump, you know?
Right. So what have you been to Russia? Did something happen when you were a kid? Like, is there some kind of, what do you think the source of that is? What do you think, like, not to be like a therapist, but like, what do you think, what are you really afraid of?
I used to have anxiety. I used to have anxiety attacks, and I learned how to have them in this way that it was like, I could be having an anxiety attack sitting next to someone in a conversation and they would have no idea that it was happening because I just learned to manage them. And I think what happened is that the anxiety itself got fucking creative and was like, all right, I'm going to find a new thing that could all of my anxieties all around control, like control mm-hmm. issues. And it was like when people started, I think when I saw Sam, you know, there's this guy that like brings around edibles. I almost said his name already, but there's this guy that brings around edibles in like to shows and shit. And they're always like in Tootsie Roll wrappers or in like actual Starburst wrappers. And whenever I see that, I'm just like, what the fuck, man? You know, cause like I'm just like this sober person at a party, and candy's like the thing I was told to reach for when I first got sober. They were like, just have some candy if you want to drink. And now I'm like, that's not safe. Cause it's like, it could be an edible and it's got the same fucking wrapper. And how's anybody going to be able to tell me this definitely isn't an edible and this is, if they're the same fucking wrapper? So that started off on this whole thing where I was like, all these edibles look like real food. Like they just look like food. And right. It was like horrifying to me that I could just be at a party and reach for a cookie. And all of a sudden I'm like on another fucking galaxy.
Right. You know? And then you've relapsed and you have to start sobriety over, and then you're on a crazy binge, and then your whole life
yeah.
has come apart.
Yeah. And it's like, and the whole thing is like, this is why when I was using, I never did acid. I never like, I would do mushrooms, but I never did acid. Cause I was like, I don't want to know what's in here. Like, I don't want to go that deep into my own fucking mind.
I always felt that way too. I never did any of those things. And I had the same thought then of like, I'm already having panic attacks and crying on the sidewalk and shit. I'm like, I can't be fucking with that. But then now in sobriety and meditation and all this shit and mindfulness, now I'm like, maybe mushrooms would have helped me. And I have that come up all the time now where I'm like, maybe microdosing or mushrooms, because I'm really into this non-duality meditation and no self and all this stuff. And mushrooms seems like a fast track there. So I'm trying to get there without it. But now I have that, I'm sober also. And I have this thought of like, maybe I should do mushrooms in Joshua Tree and stare at a tree. And then like all my anxiety would melt away. And I'm like, what happened?
My dog disagrees with you.
He's poisoned. Sorry. Someone poisoned your dog.
Oh my God. No, I literally, the same thing comes up for me. I often think about that too. Like if I did it with the right intention and I did, you know, if I just like made it a spiritual journey or whatever, then maybe I could do it. I'm not completely, convinced that that's a bad idea, but I also am not completely convinced that it's a good one. And so I just don't do anything. I'm just like, I'm just going to put that question on the shelf for another 10 years or whatever.
I feel the exact same way. And it makes me feel better to hear you say that also, because I was talking to a sober friend and she was like, I know people that are sober that have done ayahuasca or drank ayahuasca 20 times. And I'm like, well, what is it? So that means it's okay. But then I know for a fact there's other sober people that if I was like, I'm thinking of doing mushrooms, they would fucking smack me in the face and be like, shut the fuck up and go home, go to a meeting, whatever it is. But yeah, I go back and forth again. Like my mind is like, maybe I would see everything. I'd never have anxiety again. And then I'm also like, but then maybe I would drive out of Joshua Tree, go straight to, you know, Hollywood Boulevard and be like, and start fucking prostitutes and whatever the hell, you know, hooking up with my nephew.
For me, I'm not even worried about what I would do. I'm worried about like what I would see, because there's so many like horrific things that my mind can come up with, and doing like serious hallucinogens like ayahuasca or LSD, it's like, hey, would you like these illustrated for you in 5D? And I'm just like, no thanks. I don't want to fucking live in my own horror fantasies.
Right. And that's interesting you said too, like your anxiety getting creative, which is a great way to put it. And I think is the truth. It is doing that. Like from what I've read and I read all this shit all the time, is that your anxiety is a part of you that wants to survive. It has the same survival instinct as any other thing. And so when you start to, that's why for me, like when I get in the past, when I've gotten really started to feel meditation, immediately I get like anxiety right afterwards where I'm like, what is this? I just finished meditating. Yeah. And it's because like your anxiety is like, you're not getting rid of me, God damn it. And it'll get creative where it manifests for me in like tooth pain or ass pain, like not ass pain, but constipation or whatever it is. So it does. It finds new ways to fuck with you.
I like constipation defined as ass pain.
Well, it is if you do it right. If you do it the way it I do.
Yeah, it is. It's a pain in your ass. I think that ego is the same way. Like ego, my ego is the same as my anxiety in that. Like when I when it starts to dissipate, when it starts to, you know, when I sort of try to combat my ego, it will, with spirituality or whatever, it will attach itself to whatever I'm combating it with. So if I try to get spiritual, to minimize my ego will then go, I'm the most spiritual. And it will like attach itself to spirituality, which is like the most disgusting thing to watch, in others and in myself. Like I usually notice it in others first because it's just easier.
Sure.
But if you've ever seen somebody who's like, you know, very egotistical about their spirituality, those people are so fucking gross. Like Tony Robbins, for instance, makes me want to puke my guts out. That guy is disgusting to me. I can't stand him or any of those like fucking, I don't care who they are. Marianne Williams, Tony Robbins, the hugging saint, what's her face? All of those people that, like, it takes a certain level of ego to be like, I'm a spiritual leader, you know?
Right. Yeah, and it corrupts people all the time. I'm a big Sam Harris guy. I don't know if you're a fan at all.
I like him a lot, yeah.
His app, the Waking Up app, I recommend to everybody. It's, like, unbelievable. I think it's so great. But he talks a lot about, like, there's been more, quote-unquote, gurus that ended up, you know, rapists and whatever other variety of misbehaving than have not. Like, it almost feels like when you get to that level of devotion, you automatically sort of become a piece of shit to have that kind of power, which is exactly what you're talking about. And I can't name them, but I've watched the one documentary, Wild Wild Country, and there's a few other famous ones that just started to be like, or yoga, Bikram. There's another guy who starts to be like, why don't you rub my feet and then, you know, blow me or whatever.
Right. Why don't you rub my feet and then we'll kill ourselves together. it just really goes like from one level to the next very quickly. There was another guy. I was just listening to a podcast about him. It's called, I think it's Wondery, but it's a podcast is called Guru. It's about this guy who like brought people to a sweat lodge out in wherever. And, you know, he was like one of Oprah's people that he got like the golden touch from Oprah. And this like three people died in this fucking sweat lodge that he made them go into. And, you know, it's like these people don't understand that people are coming to them because they're lost. Like, and you have to consider that. You have to consider that the people that are following you may not understand the concept of boundaries or like what they're okay with and what they're not okay with. And they might force themselves to do something to get your approval. You know what I mean? It's like, so I don't know. I went on a tangent there, but I find this whole, like there's a big like self-help revolution thing going on, and there's so many people that are so lost, and they're kind of looking to anything for help, and they just go, they spin out.
Right. Maybe I should be doing that with this podcast, because I've gotten a lot of really nice reviews. Maybe I should start, you know, getting some of these guys to suck my dick or something.
Absolutely.
You know, just test it
their
out.
Faith.
Yeah.
Test their faith.
See if I like it, you know?
Yeah. You know, take them out to Joshua Tree. Make them do the mushrooms. Test it out on them. See how you feel. then take some yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Not a bad idea. So are you a therapy person? Are you a
big time?
Oh, nice. Okay. So you're currently still going to therapy?
Yeah, currently still going to therapy. I love my therapist. I've been to the same therapist for like 8 years.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
You don't go to Alan, do you?
No. No.
You know about Alan, right?
I know about Alan. I know about the comedian's therapist.
Alan's my hero.
Yeah. He's helped a lot of my friends. I go to this guy, Peter, who's in Brooklyn. He's like a little Italian man in Brooklyn.
An Italian therapist.
Yeah.
That's kooky.
It's very kooky. It's like, I can tell, I always say this to him, but I'm like, I trust you, you know, because A, you're Italian. And B, I can tell that your dad called you gay. Like, he's like this holistic therapist, but he's like a little Italian guy, you know? And I can just sense that he's like been through enough shit to like commit to this life that he's got.
Right.
That he knows what he's talking about.
Now, is this the only therapist you've been to? Have you been going for years before that? Did you shop around or is it?
I mean, I was like forced into therapy when I was like 8 or 9. Like, damn. Yeah, my mom made me go to therapy when I was like a kid because I had like temper problems and like attention problems. I couldn't like pay attention in school. And I used to just like have these emotional episodes. Like I would come home crying or I'd throw a rock at the window of my classroom. And this is like in kindergarten.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was really, I think they just didn't know what to do with me. And they put me in therapy and I like hated it. I was very turned off to the idea of therapy because I was, I think, forced into it at such a young age. And back then it was like, nobody went to therapy. That was like unheard of, you know?
Right.
Not unheard of, but like a kid going to therapy was weird.
Yeah, it's like, super weird.
Yeah, that was like a kid with problems. And I remember also I used to overeat and they were like, oh, she's overeating because there's like there's an issue. We don't know what the issue is, but this girl won't stop eating. And they were right. I wouldn't stop eating, but I'm an addict. So I think it was that. Like it was like I was just trying to like shove food into the hole in my soul.
That's,
you know?
So amazing because that's like still formative years. You came out hot. Like you came out rocking and rolling. I mean, so were your parents together? Was it a crazy situation? I mean, I don't know how deep you want to go into this.
No, buddy. But. I mean, listen, it was just me. Nothing was going on. My parents were fine. I literally came out into the world just like, all of this is too much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like I was reading The Power of Now in seventh grade.
Wow.
That's where I was at. And you know, I didn't care about it. I wasn't like, but I was like, I need help. Something, I need help. So I was like doing all this fucking shit for just when I was a teenager. Trying to get some answers for why I felt so shitty all the time. And then finally, you know, I was like, I hate therapy. I don't want to do therapy, but I found my way to it eventually because, I was going on my own, you know, I wasn't like forced into it.
Right. Right. Yeah. My parents sent me to therapy when I was really young. I'm getting that popping again. You don't hear that? You don't hear like a...
No, but if it's it might be my mic.
No, so it's got to be me because it's only when I'm talking.
Oh.
I think it's me. I think I'm stupid. I don't know.
It must be that you're stupid. That must be it.
That's what I think it is. But anyway, so I went to therapy when I was young because I was like so like psychotically introverted. I feel like I was almost like the opposite of you. Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm not the opposite. You said you're overreading. I just picture you coming out like, fuck all y'all. Just going crazy. Yeah. Like breaking shit and kicking stuff over. But yeah. I was so introverted that they thought something was wrong with me. Like I just stood in the door. I didn't make friends. I didn't talk to anybody. And then I remember like in kindergarten, I didn't go to preschool for whatever reason. My mother was like, okay, it's time to go. I was like sobbing. And I remember being like, no. It was like fucking One Flew the Cuckoo's Nest. I was going crazy.
That's crazy. That's exactly what the fuck happened to me.
Like, oh, interesting.
My first day of kindergarten, I went into school. I was on the bus. I started crying. I remember sitting down on the bus. I don't remember shit from my childhood, but I remember this day. I remember sitting on the school bus and you know the space between the seat and the window?
Yes.
Like this kid in front of me like turned around and was like this. He was like, what's your name? And I just started fucking sobbing. I was like, no. And I cried the entire fucking day, the whole day. And it was hilarious. Horrifying.
That's hilarious. I mean, that could be a bit. That's really funny. But my thing was my mother, the first day I didn't go on the bus, eventually I did, but my mother just drove me and dropped me off. And I think I remember being like, what are you nuts? Like you're going to leave me here. Like, and I think cause everyone else had gone to, and I've heard other people say this and Sarah said the same thing. And Dave Chappelle said this on Inside the Actors Studio. I think it was on Inside the Actors Studio.
Yeah.
It felt like everybody had met, like it felt like everybody knew each other. I feel like I was the last one there and it was like loud, you know, when everyone's talking in a room and it was just like that, rah, 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 like you couldn't make out. And I remember just being like, how am I going to penetrate this? How am I going to just come in and be like, hey, me too? And I was like, I got nothing to offer. I'm fucking stupid. I'm scared. And it was insane. The idea of my mother just leaving me with strangers was psychotic.
Hey, I'm Nolan Sykes, a host of Past Gas, the number one automotive podcast in the world. Every week, my co-hosts, James Pumphrey, Joe Weber, and I bring you some of our favorite stories from the hallowed halls of car history. From the amazing to the weird to the utterly unforgettable moments, we cover it all. Join us as we take a look at the wild stories and larger-than-life characters behind legendary cars and car makers. So if you love cars or just like a good story, check out Past Gas by Donut Media, the number one automotive podcast in the world.
Sorry, I had to tell my puppy to shut the fuck up because whenever there's an ambulance that goes by, she does the same sound.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, it's a fun. Anyway, no, I totally get it. I felt the same way. It's like you, it's a new world. You have no skills to operate in it. None. And they just leave you there. And it's like, there you go.
Yeah. I did not.
Fucked.
I did not like it. And it's funny because that feeling is the same feeling I still have now as an adult. Every situation I do, whether it be somebody's podcast or a club, I'm like, I can't go in there. This is crazy.
Yeah.
Like every comedy, I've been doing comedy 20 years. If I go to a club for the first time, I still walk in like, hi, is this okay? Can I come in here? And then when I leave, I'm like, that was great. That was fun. I love it. But when I get there, it's horrifying to me.
Yeah, I'm very similar. I'm good at faking it though. I learned over the years how to like fake it a little bit. And I think that has helped me a lot. But for the most part, that it's like even if I'm acting differently on the outside, that's how I feel on the inside. Is like every time I go on stage, and especially this year, because A, there is no stage, and and B, you know, it's like telling jokes at a funeral because everyone's just going through this like collective trauma right now.
Right.
I just walk on and I'm just like, I feel like so rusty and unworthy of being there and out of practice and just, it's just awful. Like it's like the worst feeling. And
yeah,
especially because, you know, being around people, I think, is the only thing that fixes that. Like if you're left to your own devices and you're just with yourself in your own head, it gets worse.
Totally. Yeah. No, I mean,
like, yeah,
Oh, fuck. This, I don't know what
I didn't mean to. I stepped on you.
No. As soon as I start talking, it starts doing this popping. But if you're not hearing it, maybe it's not coming through on the Zoom.
I'm really not hearing it at all.
Oh, God. I want to kill myself. It's so bad over here.
I mean, it's definitely because you're stupid. I think that's what's important to remember is that whatever's going on in your brain, the chemistry, it's interfering with the mic. The mic is getting confused.
That's
from being so close to your thoughts.
That's probably what it is. But now I forget what I was going to say. But yeah, no, I mean, doing shows, I'm in this weird spot now where I'm like, I don't know if I can keep doing these shows. I've done a couple good ones, but that like stand up New York in the park, no microphone thing is insane. And yep. The Zoom shows are weird. Some of them are good, but the whole thing is just really a weird time. But
a few weeks ago you were saying that you were feeling pretty good because you were starting to do these shows again. Has that worn off at all for you?
Well, I think what it is, like, you do a few shows and they're good, it just makes you want to go back to working. Like right now, and it's for me, it's like not even financial as much as like I just want to do create. I like writing and trying a new bit and it works. And now I'm like, that's kind of a bit. And then I'm like, I'll try that again in 7 days when I have my next set in a park. So I kind of just want to go back to work. And podcasts are great and fun, but they're not as they're a different kind of thing. And you start to feel, I also just released this special and people have been really nice about it and kind about it and been like, it's great and yada yada. So it makes
it's
you want to
so
like
good. I was watching it last night. It's so fucking good.
Oh,
it really is.
But it makes
me
want to
write.
That's how I feel. It makes me want to do it again. I'm like, let me go create some more. I could do better. Like, which again is probably not the best mindset of like it which probably harkens back to some sort of childhood thing of like, you like that? I gotta do that again. Like you're trying to get everyone to like you, I guess.
Well, I don't know. I think that's one of those things where there's like, there are impulses in us that are like sick or, and whether they're like based in, I think it depends, you know, because there is just like that desire to do better next time. There is just a desire to keep improving. And, you know, I see this and I hear this a lot and I do it myself where I'll go, oh, it's so fucked up. Like I'm always trying to like do better than the last time. But sometimes it's just like, yeah, you're just trying to be better than the last time. You know what I mean? It's like, that's the thing that keeps you going. And even if it's, even if it does come from like this, whatever sick desire to prove ourselves, it has become a really healthy tool in our lives in a lot of ways, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point, because we do have a tendency to be like, everything I'm doing is wrong and fucked up. And sometimes it's like, right. I like telling jokes. And that was really helpful to me when I was shooting the special and now trying to have it be out, is to not think of it in a self-centered way of like, I can do better, or I could sell the next special for such and such money, or I've gained this many followers, but to be like, oh, I'm bringing people joy. Like these people are really enjoying, and connect to the human beings that are like, I really enjoyed my night with my wife watching this, instead of being like, all right, two more fans. Great. And that's when it's really helpful, which again is avoiding that self-centered thinking and being in our own heads, which is kind of what we were talking about a moment ago.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, I feel like the only times that I do well now when I'm doing these outdoor shows or whatever, it's like just remembering that these people haven't been out of their houses either. And like, you know, my only job is just make them happy. And that is tough because a lot of my jokes are really dark. And I feel a lot of the times I'm just like, yeah, it's like, I'm standing under a patio umbrella talking about abortion. It just doesn't fucking work in broad daylight. You know what I mean? It's like, so every time I do a set, I feel like the drunkest bridesmaid at the wedding, you know, like I feel like I ruined something for someone.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get over that, but it's like, it's tough. This is, you know, I really just spun out. There was a larger point I was going to make, but I really just sort of spun out into self-hatred.
No, I appreciate it. That's what this show's all about. And you have the thing that I have as someone in recovery, you still drink like you're boozing. Like you're like, ah, that sucked. And then you just fucking bottoms up a can of LaCroix. I do that all the time. I'm like, I don't know. And I just take a water and I just pound the fucking whole thing and throw it.
You just pour it on your face.
And then just crush it on your head. And you're like, I don't know, fuck up. But well,
that's the funniest thing. Just like, just some alcoholic that's never had a regular beverage is getting sober at a meeting.
Right.
He's like drinking coffee, smashes a styrofoam cup against his head, and throws and it. Just,
yeah, and fucking punts it. And he's like, "Shut up, you fucking asshole." Now, were you? Did you drink when you were a? This is a side note from a different, I'm switching thoughts midstream here, but did you drink while you were doing comedy or did you start after you got sober?
No, I started way after I got sober. I started 6 years after I got sober.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Damn.
I don't know how people get sober like after already drinking while doing comedy. That shit blows my mind. Like that's like a fucking miracle to me because I can't imagine, like, however hard it was to get sober, I think it's got to be, like, doubled if you're a comedian. Because you're just around it all the fucking time, you know? And, like, for me, when I quit, I had to give up a lot of shit. I had to give up my friends. I had to give up my my whole way of life. So I look at, like you quit before or after you started comedy, right? You quit.
Yeah,
you were a couple of years in.
I was many years in. I was like, God, I don't even want to admit how many years in. I was like 13, almost 13 years in.
Yeah.
I've been doing comedy
that's
for
like amazing
48
to me.
Years.
I don't know how people fucking do that. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, I mean, part of it was the career. My career is just going so shittily that I was like, all right, I got to stop doing this.
Yeah.
This is not working. And, but yeah, I mean, it was crazy to be around career stuff. I mean, that's what I think about is like drinking the way I drank and the way I'm sure you drank. We obviously didn't drink together, but to be in work environments, drinking like that is so insane. But yeah. Comedy was like that. I mean, I always think the funniest thing to me in the world is the idea, and I've been laughing about this for 20 years now, the idea of like a comedy Christmas party is so funny. The idea of like, guys, it's the holidays. Let's all get together. Just let our hair down a little. Let's just cool out and have some fun. Like, it's so funny.
Right.
Like, the idea of a Christmas party is like you work in an office. It's very stiff and everyone's very, oh, hello, good evening. And then you have a Christmas party, like, let's have a few drinks and loosen up. And the idea of doing that in comedy is just so funny. Of like, we're going to have an open bar.
If any of you haven't tried crack yet, right, we're going to get together for Christmas and we're going to smoke some rock.
But but that's, I mean, it was like that on the road. Like I would be on the road and just the work was in the way of the drinking. I was like, let me see how drunk I can get. I would start now, but I got to do this fucking dumb show first.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was just destroying my career. And obviously I hated myself even more than I do right now, which is tough.
Yeah. Well, that's significant. I do think that it's funny. Like, did your career get better immediately when you quit?
Pretty much immediately. I mean, like I went to the Cellar like a month later. Like I went to audition. I had been passed at the Cellar and then stopped getting booked. And then when I got sober, I was sober for like a month and I was like, let me start trying to make things happen. Because if I'm just going to get sober and not try to do anything differently professionally, then what's even the point? So I went and started asking people like, hey, can you put in a word for me at the Cellar? And I got past at the Cellar, like, I think like I was like 5 weeks sober.
Oh, wow.
So
holy
like,
shit.
I started getting spots there and this clicking and popping is happening still, but only on my speaker, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm not going to mention
I'm
that
not
again.
Hearing it.
All right. I'm never
but
mentioning
it. If we do
again.
Have to re-record, I'm down. I don't care.
Oh God, you hate it. Like, you hate this episode. No,
this has been great. I was talking to Andy, and Andy was like, cause he got sober after starting in comedy. And he, it's really funny to me because he always talks about like, yeah, I got sober and everything got worse. he was like, everything just got so much shittier until he moved to New York. And cause in New York, I think you can just focus on comedy, and it's almost like a Ponzi scheme, how quickly you can get ahead in New York just by getting better at stand-up.
Right, right. Well, it's interesting. Sarah and I always talk about, there's actually not, when you look at comedy, I feel like in general, there's not a ton of comedians who are really successful that are crazy drunks. Like, it's hard to be a drunk and successful at comedy.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some, but like in this city, at least, most of the really successful comedians aren't partying that hard. I feel like, but maybe I'm just saying it because I'm old and I hang out with sober people.
No, I think you're right. Cause there's a lot of people that are so fucking funny, so funny. And you know, I go, what's going on? Like, why aren't they ahead of where they are? And the longer I'm around comedy, and the longer, you know, you get to know people, you start to get to know more about them, and you're like, oh, okay. Like, you just start to see them around, and you go, you start putting pieces together, and you go, that person is in their own way. That's right. The only reason why they're not ahead of where they are.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, like, I'm trying to think of like, I mean, I don't want to out people as like alcoholics or something, but I'm just trying to think of like, there's not a lot of people in the city that are like really doing well, successful, and are like drink very heavily. I mean, like Bert Kreischer's not in New York, but like he's someone that's like a party guy. He drinks a lot and is extremely successful. But he's made that his thing. That's part of his thing, is like, I go out, I party, I drink, I do shots. I don't know. I mean, this is like,
it's crazy. When I look at Bert, I'm like, I just look at him in awe. Like, as an alcoholic, I look at him and I'm just like, you're a god. Because it's like, to be able to like drink as much as he does, and then he'll like wake up the next morning and just fucking, I opened for him in Philly. Yeah, it was Philly. And he was like, oh yeah, I'm going out with the fans tonight. And then tomorrow I'm going to bike from Philly to DC tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. And I was just like watching his Instagram story, like, this guy's hungover and he's biking through several states in one fucking day. I couldn't imagine.
Yeah, it's insane, to the point where I've suspected that he was faking how much he was drinking, but all his everyone that really knows him well, and I'm friendly with Bert, they're like, no, he's drinking like that. Because I was like, he must be doing like Dean Martin, like drinking apple juice and pretending, or he's throwing beers underneath the thing. It can't be possible. But I think he is. He's like a superhero. But it's funny, as like, we're alcoholics, the idea of like, I have the same thought of like, he's amazing. Like, I'm like, that's so cool. I'm like, look at him. But
yeah, I feel like I'm meeting like a DC comic hero. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, hi, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. He's really like, he defies the laws of nature.
Yeah, it's impressive. Because for me, I don't know, you must have been pretty young when you quit drinking, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was like 22.
Yeah, because I was 30, about to be 31. And that's what part of the reason. When I hit 30, hangovers became a different situation for me. Like, when I was 23, I would, same thing, I would drink like blackout drunk and then play basketball the next day. And then when I would hit 30, I'd lose a day of my life.
Yeah, man. I mean, the hangovers, like, I could just keep going when I quit drinking. Like, it was so weird that I even quit that young. Like, there's so many times when I've just been like, why the fuck didn't you just, like, stick it out, you know? But when I look back at it, I'm like, there's no way that I could have, because I kept waking up the next day and people would be like, you tried to kill yourself last night. And I'd be like, well, I was drunk. And they'd be like, well, I'm fucking traumatized. So like I couldn't keep it going because it was just too, you know, people would, they'd be like, you're hurting us.
Yeah, I remember one time I was in the north end of Boston, which is like Little Italy, and I fell asleep on the side of on a building, like on the ledge of a building. It was like a sixth story, and it was like, you know, it's like the thick little mini wall around the building, and I was on top of the thing. So it was like this wide. It was like whatever, as wide as my ass, and I was just laying on it, and I like completely fell asleep. And my friend Ryan like woke me up with like his left hand covering my hip so I would not fall, and like pulled me off the roof. And he's like, yeah. Dude, you were just asleep there. And I was like, what? I'm like, and I was mad. I was like, what are you doing? I'm asleep. Let me fucking sleep, you fucking douche. And he's like, look where you are. And I looked down. It was like a six story. Like if I had rolled off, I would have just landed whatever the fuck, face first.
Yeah.
And I remember like a girl being like, that was crazy. It's like, oh.
Yeah. 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 It was like that. I remember my, go away. My dogs. Sorry. I swear to God. If there's one area that I have completely fucked up, go fuck off, please. I love you, but fuck off. Go away. If there's one area that I've like fucked up, it's adopting dogs. Like I only have two, but every time I'm going through like an uncertain period of time in my life, I get a dog. And my therapist has pointed it out and he's right. And I just, it's like, I can't deal with them.
Like, but is there some,
like I always for, sorry, what?
Is there some like therapeuticness? What's that word?
Yeah, there's a therapeutic value, I guess, to them. But rescue dogs are a shit show, you know? Like a rescue dog is like, yeah, they make you feel good, but for the most part, I'm like constantly stressed out about the fucking dogs.
Yeah. Louis has a great bit where he goes, I rescued a dog and then it bit everyone I know. So I returned it and got a dog that works.
Yeah. I love that bit. I love that fucking bit. It's so good. But the problem is mine isn't like my other dog was like that. We just got a puppy that we bought, which was like, that's the way to go. But the one that I have, Charlie, he's like so sweet, but it's suffocating. You know, he's like constantly, like he's sitting here fucking crying at me. I have no idea what's wrong with him. I don't know what he wants. And he's just whining for no reason.
Yeah, it sounds horrible. And I think a lot of ways having a baby is easier than having a dog.
I know people who say that, you know, people with kids would just like slap us both in the mouth for saying it. But I truly like, at least I think that having a puppy is way harder because at least like a baby isn't born knowing how to walk.
Right.
So it's not shitting on all the things that you value.
Right.
You know, good point. Of course it's shitting everywhere, but it's like it's on a table. It's in a diaper. When we got this puppy, it like the puppy pissed in my hair. Okay. It jumped on the bed and pissed in my hair. So, yeah. I mean, Andy told it too. It was his idea.
Are you guys think you're going to have kids? Is that an annoying question? Cause I get annoyed when people ask me, but I'm asking you anyways.
No, most people don't ask me that question. which I'm almost insulted by because I'm like, I always hear about people getting like harassed to have children and nobody seems to want me to.
Oh, that's so, another bit. That's really funny.
Yeah. I don't know if we're going to have kids. I feel like if things keep going the way they are, I might just do it, but I don't know if I want them or if my calendar is just empty. Like I really can't, I can't tell. I'm sure part of it is biological, but I don't think that the biological urge would be as strong if I like had road dates, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah. It seems like, it's something to do. It seems like something fun to do, but I worry. And then people get really bummed when you bring stuff up like this with people with kids, but I'm like, in many ways, and maybe I'll bum people out here, and that's supposed to be the opposite of this podcast, but in many ways, it feels irresponsible to bring a child into this world knowing what we know about, you know, climate change and automation and the economy and fucking all that shit, where I just picture having a kid and then they're 20 years old and it's 148 degrees and the oceans are dry and they're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
You knew about this? And you're like, yeah, we were bored.
Yeah. You know? Well, what the fuck else was I supposed to do? I didn't have road dates.
Yeah, I just felt like shooting a hot one in my wife and we had nothing to do. So yeah, sorry, it's really hot. And by the way, I know the oceans are expanding, not getting dry. I realize as I said that, I'm going to get some angry tweet being like, dry, they're rising. But you know what I mean, whatever.
Yeah, I do think... There's something really, especially when you're sober, there's something really great about just going for it. Just saying, fuck it. Let's fuck up our lives. It's like the only way to fuck in a way that's like destructive when you're sober. And especially when you're like married and sober, you're like, let's fuck our lives up a little bit. And
yeah.
And then, you know, you spend the rest of the month being like, ah, it's just, there's something about that. We've been doing that a lot. Just each month is like a real waiting game, you know?
Yeah, it sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's sort of Russian roulette in reverse. In reverse, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, sure, that works.
Right.
I've heard people make the case to me, a couple people, but sometimes I think they're people that just want you to have kids because they have kids. But they say, well, you have it, like you worry about the future of the world, but you having a kid as a responsible person who cares about people and civilization, you would raise a kid that thinks that way. And we actually need more people to raise children that way because people are going to be having kids no matter what. So maybe your kid, which also feels strangely egotistic in some ways, but it's like, oh, maybe our kid will offset some of the shitty kids because our kid will be like, we got to, you know, plant sunflowers or whatever the fuck you do.
Right. Yeah. I get it. I think they're saying that kind of shit to you because you actually do seem like a responsible person. But I also think about this a lot, and I talk about this with my therapist a lot, where he has said many times, he's like, it's always the least qualified people become parents.
Right.
It's always the least qualified people that are the first to become parents, because he goes, a lot of times the desire to create has been misplaced, like, or it's, is that the right word? Displaced? It's like, yeah, when you misplaced rage, but it's like misplaced creativity, where they'll go, well, instead of creating something and becoming something myself, I'm going to do this because that way I feel like I'm becoming something, but I'm really kind of putting it all into this other person. And, you know, that tends to be his perspective. He's very like, he's almost like anti-parenting. But I think he's right. Like when I look at my own life, I'm like, and I think about the order in which my friends had kids, it was the least responsible people that had them first. It was the most like existentially lost human beings that had these kids first. And the ones that I look at now, they're like fully formed human beings with like, you know, they're like self-actualized and they actually have something to pass on. And they're making the conscious choice about whether or not they want to do that. That's cool. You know, I think that's a good time to have kids if you want them.
Yeah. But, I guess it makes sense that the more thought you put into having a kid, the better parent you're going to be, because you're maturely making decisions based on your abilities.
Yeah. I mean, Andy and I've talked about it a lot where we'll go back and forth about it. Like I'll look at a kid. It's always like, we always feel pretty much on the same page with it. Like we'll be in a park and a kid is acting a certain way and we'll look at each other and be like, ugh. And then like, and then like the puppy will cuddle with us in like this like really sweet way, and we'll both be like, ah, this would be kind of nice, you know.
Right.
But we're both back and forth about it. I really don't know.
Yeah, it's
and
tricky.
Also, I mean, being a mom, it sucks.
Yeah, then you're a mom. You'd be like a hot mom, though. That's cool. That's fun.
There's no such thing as that. They always say that's a thing, and they don't fucking believe it. Nobody thinks there's a hot mom.
Like, no. We were at the beach today. There was a hot mom.
Really? Was she a hot mom? Was she like what kind of hot?
We can't be sure. It might have been a sister. It might have been a, you know, had a young kid.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
She was too hot, but she was motherly. I mean, she was with a kid and the kid was going, hey, can I get whatever? And she was like hot. So,
but that's the thing. You only think she's hot because she doesn't look like a mom. Like, it's like if you can't tell that she's a mom, then it's hot. But it's like, you can't, unless I'm like, I got to find a surrogate. I would love to find a surrogate and sit on my couch and tell her what to do.
Yeah, that seems like fun.
That really actually seems like my dream. It's just being like, make sure you work out every day. Keep that baby healthy.
Maybe do that. But I'm feeling bad, by the way. I do think I'm not a doom and gloom guy. I do think we're going to be okay with climate change and everything. I think we'll do a lot of inventing. I think capitalism will pay off in some ways, and that there's a lot of money in saving the world. I don't want to leave people, because people come to this podcast because they're sometimes some of them are stressed or anxious or scared. So I don't want to think that the world's going to end. We're going to be just fine.
Yeah. And here, I mean, I'm not the greatest at giving out comforting advice, but I will say this. If it is the end of the world, there's nothing we can do about it. So embrace death.
That's good. That's good advice. I mean, this is what I did. I gave $50 to the Nature Conservancy yesterday because I'm like, all right, that's what I can do. That's the minimum I can do right now. And, you know, we'll be okay. I think desalination, we'll be able to do that. And then we might have to move inland a little bit. We'll build some seawalls, and they got carbon vacuums and shit.
Listen, human beings have been saying it's the end of the world for so long. And I think it's just part of our, it's part of our culture now to catastrophize. I really do think that there are more people out there that care than those that don't. And I think that we're all, if each of us is doing their part in whatever small ways they can, and whatever big ways they can, I think that we're all going to be okay.
Yeah. This is a good way to end. This is nice. We got nice and we're going to be fine. You're going to be, if you're listening and watching at home, you're going to be just fine. Or like you said, you won't be, and that's okay too. You have to accept. And if you're suffering, it's probably because you're trying to control something that you can't control. Right?
Like being poisoned.
Yeah, you can't control that. Or you can. You can bring your own shit to the party, I guess.
True. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. This was so fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun. I mean, thanks for doing it. thanks for
we just reversed the
I know you wrapped it up and I was like, no, I appreciate it. It's always a good feeling. Back. It's always a good feeling when the guest wraps up. You're like, okay, well, that feels good. I'm like, oh shit.
No, I you and I are the same in that whenever there's a loss of momentum, we panic.
Oh, it's so bad. I have no, I'm like, I've said, I'm trying to do this as a bit. I'll order at a restaurant, and if the waitress doesn't respond, I just keep ordering. I'm like, let me get scrambled eggs and bacon. She just stands there and I'm like, and an orange juice and a smoothie and a Coke and a hot dog. Fuck, say anything. And my bill's like $48.
The whole thing.
I'm like, shit. But no, thank you. Hey, do you want to plug some things? Do you have some things you want to plug?
Yeah. I have a podcast with my fiance called Find Your Beach. And I have my own podcast called Devil's Advocate with Rosebud Baker. And you can find me on both of those and Twitter and Instagram at Rosebud Baker.
Great. Well, thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. It's nice to see you. And it's fun chatting. I always enjoy it.
Great to see you too. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, it was great. Thank you.
Mindful Metal Jacket is hosted by comedian Joe List. Produced by Joe List. Edited by Matt Kleinschmidt. Executive producers Robert Kelly and Matt Kleinschmidt for the Laugh Button Podcasts.